Over the course of the next 4 weeks, we're going to lean into this reality that every single one of us know all too well, and it's this, that every single one of us find ourselves on this trail through life. That our lives in its entirety and every facet of our lives are on this trail, and every single one of those trails is all headed somewhere. Whether we acknowledge it or not, we are headed to an ultimate destination. And yet arriving at that destination the way in which we want to, and even arriving at the correct destination, requires us to do things differently, to see the right things, do the right things, and even attach ourselves to the right guide in order for us to journey along this trail to the best of our ability and along the purpose that you and I have been called to in our lives. And yet the problem is this, is that in our lives, as we journey through these trails of life and the trails that carry us through every facet of our life, what we all know to be true is this, is that within this world, there are far more options than we can count, screaming for our attention, wanting for us to deviate from the trail, wanting for us to go in the wrong direction. And what we know too well from experiences of our past, unfortunately, is this, is that when we find ourselves following the wrong deviations of the trail, the trails of life are anything but happy. Am I right? And this series is designed to help us be able to experience the trails of life in the best way possible. For us to begin to make some different choices in our travels so that as we journey through life, we don't simply reserve ourselves to following the same trails that everybody else in this world is following. Because when we do, what we find is this. We find ourselves in the poison ivy of life. We find ourselves encountering poisonous creatures or treacherous terrain along the trail that we were never meant to take. And we find ourselves journeying trails that everybody else is journeying. And yet deep inside, what everybody would attest to is this. No one wants to travel those trails. No one wants to encounter the poison ivy. No one wants to encounter the poisonous creatures. No one wants to encounter the treacherous trails. And so how do we find ourselves avoiding those pitfalls and living a healthier life and walking a healthier trail? You see, that's what this series is all about. It's about the reality that what if there was a way for us as we journey through life to actually encounter God? What if there was a way for us to actually attach ourselves to a better God who ultimately knew the trails better than we knew? And what if there was a way for us to experience His best as we journey through this life? And we thought in order for us to go on this journey together and learn how to experience the happy trails through this life and the time we have left on this earth, the best way was for us to hone in on some insight that allowed us to know how we travel the trail well. And the best insight that I could think of was going back to the book of Psalms. You see, right smack dab in the middle of the book of Psalms, we find these 15 Psalms. And if you aren't familiar with the book of Psalms, here's what you need to know. Every single one of the 151 Psalms was written to music. And when we find these 15 songs, they were written specifically for the pilgrimage to Jerusalem that Jews would take 3 times a year, according to ancient Jewish law. And so if you want to think according to modern terms, here is what you should think of these 15 passages that we're really going to hone in on over the course of the next 4 weeks. These are the very first road trip playlist that were ever created. Thousands of years ago, they knew that in order for us to take a trip, the first important step is for us to determine what we're going to listen to on the way. Everybody in their right mind knows you don't go on a long trip without first choosing your playlist. And a couple of thousand years ago, they created these 15 songs that were called the Songs of Ascent. And it's what were sung over and over and over again as they traveled to the Passover, as they traveled to the Festival of Weeks or the Festival of the Tabernacles. The 3 different festivals that every Jew was required to ascend upon the city of Jerusalem to celebrate all together and to offer their sacrifices to their God. And the reason why they're titled, to give you just a little bit of context, the reason why these 15 songs are titled the Songs of Ascent is this. It's really straightforward and quite practical. Because in your journey to Jerusalem, no matter where you came from in the nation of Israel, everybody in their journey had to ascend to the city of Jerusalem, because how they built this city was on the plateau of a mountain range. And so there was a valley that was down below it, and you journeyed through the valley and then ascended up until the city of Jerusalem, up on the top of this plateau of the mountain range. And what's so incredible is that as we dive into these 15 different chapters, and really we pick out four that headline these 15 songs of ascent, what we find is this. We find some absolutely incredible insight that still applies to our lives and our journeys thousands of years later. It's as if the psalmist knew exactly what you and I were going to walk through. And right off the bat, in these 15 songs of ascent that, as I laid out, apply directly to our lives and the differing circumstances of our lives, the psalmist goes head into maybe the most important trail, or maybe the most frequently traveled trail, that you and I travel time and time again in our lives. And it's this, that right off the bat, the psalmist begins to write a song about traveling the difficult path. About traveling the path of hardship and heartache and letdown and difficulties. And the reality is that for far too many of us in this room, we come in carrying our fair share of that right now. That we walked into this room feeling like we're walking the trail of difficulty and hardship and heartache and loss in some facet of our life, wondering how to get through, wondering what we should be looking at, wondering how we stay on our feet and keep moving forward when it feels like the difficulties of this world consistently want to knock us to our knees. And yet, the psalmist outlines right off the bat in Psalm 121 what it looks like and how we begin to travel this trail to the best of our ability and how we can remain on our feet even in the difficult seasons of life. If you haven't done so already, it's a perfect opportunity for you to grab your weekly. It's what you got when you came in this morning. And if you crack that open, what you're going to find on the inside is a notes page that we've designed specifically for you. And all we want you to do is this, to bust that out, and it'll help you follow along as we move through the text, maybe even grab a pen from the seat back in front of you and fill in some blanks of some things that you want to hang on to as you travel through the difficult trails of life. If that's not your style, everything's going to come up on the screen for you as well. But here is Psalm 121. Starting in verse 1, he writes, "I look up to the mountains. Does my help come from there? No, my help comes from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. He will not let you stumble. The one who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel never slumbers or sleeps. The Lord himself watches over you. The Lord stands beside you as your protective shade. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon at night. The Lord keeps you from all harm and watches over your life. The Lord keeps watch over you as you come and go, both now and forever." You see, right off the bat, the psalmist acknowledges this question that you and I face far too often in our lives, and it's this. What do we do as we travel through difficult seasons? That in our lives, when things get difficult, what is our go-to? How do we react to that? What do we look to? What do we use to cope with those difficulties of our lives? And as we look back on our past, if you're anything like me, what you find is this. You find a quick answer to what your go-to is, don't you? That as you go through difficult seasons, or maybe as you're traveling through a difficult trail right now in your life, it's easy to pinpoint that that's where I begin to lose hope, that that's where I begin to turn to this or that in my life to help me cope with that, that here's what I struggle with, or here's where I begin to question God, and here's where I begin to feel distance. And we answer this question time and time again, and yet maybe as we sit at this beginning of traveling a new trail in our lives in the difficult seasons, the question we should be asking is this: what should I do in the most difficult seasons of life? We all know what we do, but the question we should be asking is, what should I do? What should I be looking at? What should I be focusing on? What helps me actually stay on my feet as I travel through the difficult seasons of life that wants to knock me to my knees? And this passage gives the answer to that question. This is where you should turn when shadows deepen and when life looks bleak. And the reality is the writer of this passage knew the reality of difficult trails. And here's why. Because as they took this pilgrimage to Jerusalem three times per year, every Jew knew the difficulties that awaited them along this trail to Jerusalem. And it really awaited them in a few significant ways. The first is this. Obviously, walking by foot everywhere you go, no such thing as designated road areas or cars at that point, they knew that they were going to encounter treacherous terrain, especially in their ascent, places where the footing wasn't strong and they were probably going to fall down and there could be injury along the way, as well as treacherous climate. That you don't think of the Middle East in this way, but in their journey to Jerusalem, dependent upon where they were coming from within the nation of Israel, temperatures could range based upon the time of the year anywhere from 35 degrees to 90 degrees, right? So just think of it like walking three times of the year through Ohio, right? We all got a good picture of that. Dependent upon the day and what time of the day, it could be 35 degrees, and by night it could be 90 degrees. You get all the seasons. And they realized that in these travels, they never knew what they were going to be up against climate-wise. But that wasn't all the danger that was presented. What also was presented in this, every thief, every criminal, every robber, every rapist knew when the three different pilgrimages would happen to Jerusalem. And essentially, they knew this was the money time of the year. That everybody they could count on being traveling along treacherous terrain at this one time. And so what would the criminals and the robbers choose to do? They would choose to scope out and find the most treacherous or secluded part of the trail, and they would hide out there, just waiting for the unsuspected traveler, just waiting for the traveler who was going by himself, or the small family who didn't have a caravan of people for protection and safety that they were traveling with, and then they would jump out and rob them for everything that they were worth. And you see, everybody going on this pilgrimage knew the dangers that they were potentially in for and the uncertainty that they were placing their entire family in choosing to go on this journey. You see, they knew full well what difficulty and uncertainty looked like. And the reality was, as they traveled through these dangers and uncertainty, this question would run rampant along their journey, sometimes even before the journey even began. We see it right at the very beginning in verse 1. I look up to the mountains. I'm about to go through difficulty. I'm about to go through uncertainty. And he asked this question, does my help come from there? Some of y'all have heard this passage before, and it's termed this way. Where does my help come from? Well, where in the world do I find help in the midst of my difficulty? And the reality was, is it's like the psalmist is also forcing me to ask this question of myself. In my moments of difficulty, where do I look for help? Where do I go for help? And essentially, he sets the table in an incredible way that as we just read this passage without looking into the context, we can miss the last step of power that this passage holds. And it's this. You see, essentially, the writer is setting this up based upon his knowledge and his experience in Roman, Greek, and Egyptian culture. And knowing Roman, Greek, and Egyptian culture, what he was essentially writing about as he says, my eyes look up to the hills. Does my help come from there? What he was writing about was this reality in ancient Roman, Greek, and Egyptian culture. That in every city you would walk into, what they would choose to do was this. Within every single one of those cities, they would have false gods and idols dependent upon the religion that was rising up within that particular city. And their goal was to place in a position of superiority, to place those false gods or those idols as high as they possibly could. And so they would build these giant pillars, and then they'd place the statue of that god at the top of that. Or they'd look for the very highest point of the city, where everybody within the city, their eyes would have to go up to this highest point, and they would put the figure of that idol or that false god up there. And it was this reality that he was addressing. I look up to the highest places of this earth, where the false gods bound in every city that we are in. Does my help come from there? And y'all, I don't know about you, but when we connect the dots here, this one hits home for me. Because when I look at the difficult seasons of my life, what I recognize is this, is that the false gods of my life and my world no longer require me to look up. They stare me straight in the face every single day in the world in which we live. That as I walk through difficult seasons, the place where it's easy to look eye to eye to and to say, man, that's where I look for help when things aren't going the way I want it to. Just a little bit more money. Just a little bit more recognition. just a little bit higher on the corporate ladder. Those are the answers to the struggles that I'm going through. That's where my help comes from. That as we walk through this, maybe it's just a little bit more social standing or a different spouse. That's the answer, right? A different spouse. That will bring me the happiness and the joy in this difficult season that I'm walking through. Or different kids. Let's trade them in for new ones. Not a bad idea all the time. Or maybe for some of us, it's simply that in these moments of difficulty, it's always that substance. That substance seems to cover up the pain, seems to take away the pain. Even if it's only temporary, at least it does the job for a little bit. And we just keep going back to the things and the trails of this world again and again and again in moments of difficulty. Is that where my help comes from? And yet when we get honest, when we look close enough and we become mature enough, what we see is what the psalmist ultimately understood. And it's this: all of those things of this world are simply temporary. They look like a solution now. They look like a shortcut now. But guess what? They will always eventually fall short. They will always eventually lead you down a path you didn't want to go. They will always eventually run out and no longer fix the problem or fix the pain in the long term. And you see, the reality is, on our journeys, we have a choice to make. And instead of looking at what we have done or what everybody else is doing, the psalmist then says, this is where you should look in your moments of difficulty. In verse 2, he says, now, my help comes from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. You see, this is significant because he points out this reality. I look to the hills. I look to heaven and earth. Does my help come from there? No, I look to the one who made heaven and the earth. You see, he doesn't just look to the hills, he looks above the hills. And he makes this statement: I'm not looking to the highest things of this world, I'm looking to the one who made the highest things of this world. Because what I know is that's the thing that lasts. That's the solution that quenches what's going on inside of me and the hurt and the pain and the heartache and the stumbling that I'm enduring through this life. That's the only sure thing I know. And as we look through story after story of our lives and story after story of Scripture, we find this oftentimes being the stumbling block in moments of difficulty. It was the stumbling block in the story of David and Goliath, right? That when we look at the story of King Saul spent his entire life focused on his own stature, right? What we know about King Saul was that he was the tallest man in Israel. He towered over everybody else, and he spent his life focusing on his superiority and how much taller he was than everybody else and how much greater he was than all of his kingdom. But when he focused on his own height, when someone else came along that was taller than him, he had no answers. And yet David approached life in the inverse. You see, David spent his life not focusing on his own shortness, on his own inferiority as a shepherd boy. David spent his life focusing on the height of his God. And when someone came along that was taller than David, it didn't faze him. It doesn't matter if you're taller than me, because I know you're still shorter than my God. And David clung to that in moments of difficulty. And what we find in David's story is this: that even when the rest of the world would have said, you're crazy, you shouldn't do that, David was capable, even in seasons of difficulty, of taking steps of courage. Because his courage wasn't attached to his stature, his courage was attached to God's. And you see, all of us have that ability, have that option out in front of us. Because let's just be real for a second. Oftentimes, the things of this world that we encounter are going to be bigger than you, y'all. Y'all okay? That diagnosis is bigger than you. The war is bigger than you. The economy is bigger than you. The messes of this world are bigger than you. And if we focus on those things in comparison to us, we will be tempted to seek the false gods of our life and our world to help us cope with all the things that are bigger than us. But when we begin to look at the size of our God and tell our problems, not our size, but the size of our God. No longer do we have to be tempted for a coping mechanism to help us fix it. We've already got a God who's bigger than that. So I don't have to fear. I don't have to live in the worry. I don't have to live in the uncertainty. You see, when we travel through deep shadows and bleak moments of life, and we choose to simply look above the coping mechanisms of this world, the coping mechanisms that the rest of the world is using, we find something absolutely incredible in our God. And the psalmist outlines this. He says there are three things that you see when you look above the hills, the false gods, the coping mechanisms of this world, and you begin to link arms and want to encounter a relationship with your God. What you will find every single time along this trail is this. First and foremost, you will always find a sure-footed God. A God who is strong and steady and secure, that when we link arms with him, all of a sudden we become more sure-footed because we're attached to a God who never loses his footing. No matter how treacherous the terrain, no matter how many roots pop up, no matter how rocky it gets, no matter how steep the incline, that when we hang on to his hand, that we have a God who is capable of carrying us through even life's most difficult moments. You see, I've told y'all before about my two boys. I've got a 4 and a 5-year-old. And what I simply describe them as 4 and 5-year-old boys, is they are all boy all the time. And within our household, what that looks like is this. If you want to destroy something, go outside and destroy something. And so we spend a lot of time outside, y'all. And with that, for those of you who have had little kids and you spend a ridiculous amount of time outside, what you've quickly learned is this. A lot of time outside climbing and riding bikes in the road and doing everything outdoors leads to a whole lot of bruised shins and skinned knees and Band-Aids that need to come out to fix the boo-boos, right? And what I've learned about my boys is that at 4 and 5 years old, they have not completely developed all of their motor skills yet. And that simply leads to them and their life having even more boo-boos and scraped knees and blood running down the leg. And with us, oftentimes, sometimes just to more quickly and sort of more seamlessly get us to nap time, we've developed a habit of really enjoying hiking within our house. And so we'll take them to the trails around Clear Fork Reservoir. Sometimes we'll go to Mohican. And what we recognize is this, is with my boys not having fully developed their motor skills yet at the stage of life that they are in, that when the terrain gets difficult and when the roots grow up out of the ground and it gets steep, or there's like a steep drop off on the side where it just plunges into the lake, it's like 10 feet down, that those are incredibly dangerous parts of the trail for them. Because they are far more likely, based upon their own ability, to fall down in those moments. But here's what's incredible, is that in those moments where the terrain gets treacherous, it gets rocky, the roots grow up, the trail narrows, it becomes steep going up or steep going down, that my boys have learned that the way in which they become secure in their footing in passing over the treacherous terrain and the difficult trails by reaching out for mommy or daddy's hand. That all of a sudden, the dangers of the trail become far less dangerous when I have the hand of someone who's secure. And yet, oftentimes in our lives, what we miss as we journey through the treacherous parts of the trail is this. Is I'm a broken, messed up father. My heavenly father is not. There are treacherous parts of the trail with my boys where I like reach out and like, I don't care if you want to hold my hand or not, you're going to hold my hand. And you see, the reality though is that our God loves us in such a way that he never does that. He holds his hand out, but he never grabs your hand and forces you to hold it. My hand is always here, just waiting for you to reach back, just waiting to be your sure-footed God. And yet all I'm asking you to do is just say, life is hard. This part of the trail is hard and it's difficult and the roots are growing up and I don't know how to get through and I don't want to fall. I'm tired of the skinned knees, God. I want to be able to stay on my feet, and so I'm reaching out for a sure-footed God that'll guide me through. You see, here's the cool part. Not only does he promise to be a sure-footed God in our life, but he also promises within this passage that I never turn my back to your worries, your fears, the dangers that you walk through in life. I never fall asleep. I never let down my guard. Even when you do, I don't when you take my hand. You see, what did he say there in verses 3 and 4? He will not let you stumble. The one who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel never slumbers and never sleeps. You see, it's this reality that when we grab the hand of the sure-footed God, what we begin to experience is an unexplainable peace in the moments of difficulty. This reality that you can sleep because our God never does. Hello. I don't know about y'all. Any of y'all need that in your lives as you travel through difficult seasons? That now I have a peace that I'm able to sleep, that I'm able to find rest because I know I've got a God on guard that never sleeps, that never slumbers, that always has my back, and I've chosen to reach out and to grab his hand and allow him to lead me through the parts of the trail that I don't know how to traverse on my own. You see, that's what we find in our God time and time again. And when we experience that peace, we begin to elude those seasons of our lives. Y'all know what I'm talking about, right? Where the fears and the worries in us that rest within us keep us from ever getting any rest. That now all of a sudden we don't have to attach ourselves to those fears and those worries of the rocky terrain and the difficult seasons because, one, we know we have a sure-footed God. And we don't have to live our lives as some of us do, those of us who are realists or pessimists in the room. Like even when life is good, we're just waiting for the other shoe to drop. And so we just constantly live in fear or in worry in our lives. That we don't have to live in worry or fear of when the next shoe is going to drop and the rocky terrain is going to resurface in our lives. Because I know, I've experienced, I grabbed the hand of the sure-footed God before and he led me through. And now I know he's faithful to lead me when we get there again. You see, that's what we get to experience. That's what we have at our disposal. And he's just saying, I'm just asking you to reach out. My hand's already there. Just grab on. Let's go for a ride. Let's go for a walk. Let me keep you on your feet. But that isn't all that we get. We also get this. We also get from God, as we look to him and grab onto him, a shelter in every season. A shelter that gives us rest and gives us protection when life is difficult, but also when life seems good. You see, in my family, every other year, we go on a family vacation with our in-laws. And we've become accustomed because most, like 99% of our family, absolutely loves the beach, that our vacations are always beach vacations. And I know the dark hair may not totally give this away, but I'm pretty light-complected, y'all. And just like the rest of you guys, I live in Ohio 12 months out of the year, in which it feels like 6 months out of the year, the sun don't shine. And so every single time we embark upon our family vacations to the beach, we get out there on day one, and it's like, I've just come out of Ohio, y'all. We ain't seen the sun. We ain't seen 90 degrees, and here we are on the beach. Let's live it up, right? And so we're out there on the beach all day. We're boogie boarding. We're reading our books. We're sitting in our beach chairs. And at the end of day one, the same thing time and time again always happens to Ben Carver. I come out of day one looking like a, yeah, right? Some of y'all have been there. I come out of day one looking like an absolute lobster. That even when the sun was shining, and even when the clouds were sparse, that in my life it was still necessary for me to have protection. That even when things are great, that there's still a necessary facet of our lives and the trail we walk, that we need protection in our lives. And because my family probably got tired of me looking like a lobster, what we started doing is they started bringing the pop-up canopy along. And we set up the pop-up canopy, and I could live my best life while still being under the protection of the shade, still experience all the great things of life while still having the protection that carried me through even the best moments of life. And you see, that's what's necessary in our lives. We need a shelter for every season. And in verse 5, he promises that the Lord himself watches over you. The Lord stands beside you as your protective shade. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon at night. You see, we all seek shelter as we go through the storms of life. And that's great. That's necessary. But oftentimes, we miss the fact that we also need shelter from the heat. when things are good and the sun is shining and everything in life is going according to plan. We need shade, we need rest from the hustle and the stress and the constant pace of our lives, our jobs, our families. Even when the journey seems to be going well without shelter, y'all, we get burnt. We get burnt out, or we get burnt by relying on our own pride. I can do this myself. I got this. The path is easy now. I don't need to hold anybody else's hand. I don't need anybody to walk me through this. I'm strong enough to do this. And frankly, guess what? Because I'm good enough to do this now, even when the terrain gets a little bit rocky, I can do this on my own still. And we give pride a foothold in our lives. And God's saying, no. I want to give you rest. I want to give you protection, not just when things are bad, but also when things are good. And when we look at a different translation, it gives us even further insight into what the psalmist was talking about. In the NIV in verse 5, it's written like this. The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. And you're like, Ben, that doesn't make any sense. Why does that give us any more of an inclination at what the psalmist is talking about? Well, as we look through Scripture, what we find is this. That any time he writes about the right hand, he's talking about a place of power. Sorry, lefties. That the right hand was this place of power. That Jesus sits at the right hand of God. That if you sit at the right hand, you're sitting at a position of power. And here he's saying that God is your protection even when you go through the good things of life. Why? Because Satan doesn't just attack our weaknesses. He also attacks our strengths. That Satan would like nothing more than for you and I to believe he only comes after you in your weak spots. Your failures, your shortcomings, that's the only thing that Satan is interested in. When the truth is, Satan wants to attack your strengths and instill pride in your life more than anything else. He wants you to believe that you can traverse this trail on your own. You don't need anybody else. You can get through this. You're strong enough. You're good enough in this area of your life that you don't need to hold anybody else's hand. And the reality is that when we do that without any help, we fail to acknowledge that even our greatest strengths will never be enough. Even our greatest strengths will never be enough. We still need someone who is bigger than the hurts and the diagnosis and the deaths and the treacherous terrain of this world. We need shelter in all lives in every season. And then third, what we realize and what we see in God and find in him is this, is that he also commits to being a guardian for our soul. In verse 7, it says this, the Lord keeps you from all harm and watches over your life. You see, this word life translated in English, the original Hebrew word actually meant heart or soul. The Lord keeps watch over your heart, over your soul. It's as if the psalmist knew this reality, that as your heart goes, so goes your life. That your heart, that your soul is the wellspring of life. And if you don't protect your soul, you will begin to encounter problems in every facet of your life, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. That if our soul goes unprotected, that we begin to encounter problems in our life that we were never meant to encounter. And God knew that about Ben Carver. He knew that my soul, that my heart was vital, and that it needed a guardian, it needed protected, it needed to stay healthy. And ultimately, what God understood and what he's speaking into our lives is this, is that as a Christ follower, if you're a Christ follower in this room, you have been called to something. And that something can be simply boiled down to this. You have been called to go into all the world and reach people for me. You know what that means? You have been called with your life to pour out into other people. And yet what we often miss is this. You can't pour from an empty cup. Sometimes the most selfless thing you can do is take care of your own soul. Because you can't take somebody someplace you've never been. If you're wanting to pour your life into somebody else, pour what Christ has given you into somebody else, you first have to fill up your own cup so that you have something to pour into somebody else. It's the reason why when you hop onto a plane, what do they always tell you? If those breathing thingies pop out of the ceiling, the first thing you need to do is what? Put it on yourself. Because if you're passed out, y'all, you ain't no good to anybody around you. You put it on yourself first, and then you take care of the person beside of you. And the same is true when it comes to our hearts, our souls. We pour into, we grow ourselves, we connect ourselves to the guide, the source of life, and then from that, we are now capable of pouring into everybody else. And here's what's so cool. This is kind of under the surface, y'all, but this is so good. If you read 1 through 8 in this passage, there is a significant shift that happens from verses 1 to 2 and then into 3 through 8. In verses 1 to 2, as he writes this song, he continues to write this. Check it out. You can see it. Me, 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 me. He talks about me. He talks about me. He talks about me. And then we shift to verse 3, and what do we see it change to? You, you, you. That when I took time to care for my own soul, now I've got something to pour into your life. Now I've got something to offer you. Now I've got something to build you up. Now I've got something to help you grow. Now I've got something to help you find Jesus in your life, in your circumstances, in your despair, in the moments of hopelessness, of your difficulty, and your struggle. See, this is a necessary first step for us. That we have to be willing to care for our own soul. Because back to the hiking with my family, what I recognize is this, is that as we traverse steep terrain, or when it gets rocky, that for me, in a healthy way to reach my hand out to my wife and to help her up the steep terrain, what is the necessary first step that I must take? I have to make sure that my feet are planted in the right place, right? Because if my feet are planted on shifting sand, I'm no help to her and I'm a danger to myself as well. I have to make sure that my feet are planted and my feet are secure and that I'm in the right place to be able to offer secure help to somebody else to lift them up the rocky terrain that they're going through. And the same is true in our lives, that as we traverse through the trails of our lives, that we find a way to ensure that I'm connecting to the source so that I ensure that my feet are secure so that then I am ably ready to help other people as they go through rocky and steep terrain of their life as well. See, when life gets hard, as we move along this trail, we all have a choice. Every single one of us. And the choice simply boils down to this. Where will you go for help? When things get hard, where will you look for help? Will you follow the trail that the hikers in front of you are following, that everybody else in this world is following? It leads you down paths you were never meant to journey? Or will you choose something different? Will you choose something better? Will we collectively choose to acknowledge that the hikers in front of us aren't the best guides? But we have a guide that's sure-footed at our disposal that we can tap into, that we can link arms with, that we can hold hands with and traverse the difficult terrains of this life. And when we make the choice to step back and say, it doesn't matter what I've done up until this point, the choices I've made, how many times I've said I can do it on my own, what I recognize now is that from this point forward, I want to hold hands with the sure-footed God. I need a shelter in every season, and I need a guardian for my soul. What we begin to experience when we start there, when that becomes our foundation, is we begin to experience life isn't easy. We will still go through treacherous terrain, but we make it through that treacherous terrain on our feet, and we begin to experience what's best known as happy trails. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, we thank you for being a God, a Father, who never stops reaching out his hand. And sometimes, God, I wish you'd just be a father who grabbed my hand and forced me. But you love me too much for that. You've given me a choice in this relationship, a choice along this trail. And God, on this day, regardless of what I've done in my past, the choices I've made, how I've tried to go it alone time and time again, God, today I want to have courage. Enough courage, enough maturity along this trail to be able to make a different choice. A different choice going forward. That I'm tired of the scraped knees and the bruised shins. I'm tired of falling down. I need a better guide. And so, God, we reach out our hand. And on this day, we link hands with you and ask you to be our sure-footed guide. God, we also acknowledge the responsibility that we have to pour into ourselves first. The most selfless thing we can do is take care of our own soul, to fill ourselves up with you so that then we have something to pour out into others. God, may we be capable, may we be willing to do that so that we can traverse this trail to the best of our ability. It's in your name.